Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Heather Hansen, founder of Global Speech Academy, where she helps top global leaders show up, speak up, and inspire action in a changing world. She's also the author of Unmuted, the must-read guide to enhancing your communications. And today, I'm so excited to have her on the show because we're going to be discussing accent bias at work. Welcome, Heather.
Hi, Tani. Thanks so much for having me.
I am really excited for today's conversation. You and I have spoken already and talked. We probably could have talked for hours and hours about this topic because you have so much information to share about it. And I'm just so passionate about kind of hearing and learning more. So I'm excited for us to be sharing that with our audience today.
I am too. And I think we could have spoken all day. So that will be the toughest challenge for us, fitting this into 45 minutes, I think.
I absolutely agree. Anytime I have a guest on the show, I think first, it's really important for our listeners to understand, why did I ask Heather to be on the show talking about this topic? So I'd love it if you could share a little bit about yourself and how you began working in this field before we really kind of jump into the topic.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I was born and raised in California. So I won the linguistic lottery at birth, born into English language, first of all, and also an accent that is considered quite neutral. And we'll talk about what that means, I'm sure. But born and raised there thinking I had no accent at all until I went off and studied international studies. I spent quite a bit of my university years abroad working and studying. And my second degree was in German language. So I was actually working and studying in German in Austria and Switzerland. And that was when I first started having my experiences around accent bias, recognizing very clearly that people did not take me quite as seriously when I was speaking German, even at a quite fluent level, as they would have had I been speaking English. And then this continued. When I graduated, I moved to Denmark after meeting a gorgeous Dane in a bar on a Saturday night in Switzerland and learned another language. I'm now fluent in Danish. I've lived in Denmark for 8 years total. And there I also experienced it, probably even more so because I was even more fluent. You know, we have two girls, we speak Danish at home. It's my second language, right? And that was where I also really experienced that bias against me. Always the topic of conversation at dinner parties, right? Or being called charming in the middle of a business meeting when I'm not trying to be charming at all. And then follow that along the life track, I moved to Singapore. And the girls are actually born here, and we've been here a total of 13 years. And I started my company here as well. And in this particular situation, my privilege came back again. And I've been able to build a very successful business here in Singapore, working in the area of communication skills training, presentation skills training, helping people to speak clearly and confidently in the English language global economy, primarily because I am white Western and have what they consider to be a prestigious English accent. And someone who was locally Singaporean would never have been able to gain the same amount of respect that I have in this field. So that's a bit of the hypocrisy of my work. And I try to use the privilege that I have to give others a voice and to raise awareness about this topic, because I think it's so incredibly important we begin speaking about it, not just in the DEI space, but everywhere, understanding what this both privilege and bias can mean for people's career track.
One of the things I find so interesting about your path to where you are right now is the fact that the personal aspects of your life interweave with the professional aspects of the things that you studied about. I mean, you're an award-winning, don't want to say arguer, but you know, you've won awards for your oral skills, and then to watch kind of as your history evolves, and you have these personal experiences that I don't want to say force, but cause you then to have all these other language skills, and then to have and to see firsthand in personal relationships, kind of at dinner parties, in conversations, how you do have this skill set and this privilege, I think is really interesting as we kind of use that as the foundation to now talk about accent bias more generally.
Right.
Let's tell our listeners a little bit more. What does Global Speech Academy do?
Yeah, so Global Speech Academy is a company I founded here in Singapore in 2007, and it has always been a communication skills training, coaching, consulting company where we run programs on presentation skills, on building empathy. It's people skills, communication skills in general, and specifically looking at global communication, so cross-cultural, and how do we bridge the gaps between culture and language? Because here in Southeast Asia, it is so incredibly international. There's an amazingly large international expatriate workforce here, skilled workforce, and there's a lot of these kinds of issues. So every single day, I'm having conversations with people from multiple countries. If I have a dinner party here, it's 12 different nationalities and 18 languages. You know, it's really amazing, the international touch, which I love. It brings such a special energy. But I always say, you know, even if you're sitting in your living room in my hometown in California, the world's coming to you. So these topics are really everywhere now. And so we run training on how to communicate globally. It doesn't matter if English is your first or your fifth language, we all need to start learning about how to speak simply, clearly, and bridge these gaps.
No, very important topics. I think that's important for all of us to keep in mind, especially, I mean, here we are talking, you're in Singapore, I'm in the United States in the Eastern time zone. Our ability to connect with people and do business across countries, you know, there's just no limitations anymore. And then having a skill set where we all feel comfortable communicating, at whatever level our language skills are, I think is so important. And you've done a great job. And I'm excited to talk more kind of during the course of today's show about aspects of discrimination and different biases that we all may have when we're having some of these discussions. I know some of these original topics came up in a book that you authored entitled Unmuted. Can you tell us a little bit more about that book and then how also accent bias played a role in that book?
Sure. Yes. So Unmuted, and the subtitle is How to Show Up, Speak Up, and Inspire Action. And this book came out about a year ago, just over a year ago. And it tries to combine all the different areas of my work into one small volume. So it's probably about six books in one. But what I'm presenting in that book is my view of global communication in what I've called the Unmuted framework. And that consists of a Venn diagram, basically, of three different areas: conscious, confident, and connected communication. So within that conscious bubble, it's all about the active listening, the cross-cultural intelligence, reading the room, knowing if you're dominating or not, and how much you've contributed, and having that conscious understanding of the relationships there. And the confidence bubble is really your self-confidence, self-worth, and skills confidence, which we need to have. And that's the little sliver of training solutions that's where that comes in. But my frustration in writing this book, what led to it, was this idea of getting the phone call every October from HR saying, okay, Heather, next year we want to focus on communication. Can you do a one-day presentation skills course and fix everything? It's like, that's not how it works. We need to look at it more holistically. Training plays a role, but it's a very minor one. So that's in that confidence bubble. And then finally, connected communication, which looks at psychological safety, building relationships, human skills, empathy, vulnerability, overcoming fear of failure, all of those pieces. And my argument is that we need all three of these areas in equal balance to be truly unmuted. Because if you're confident and connected, but you're not conscious of the situation, then your voice is too loud, right? That's that piece that's too loud. But if you're lacking confidence, you're probably turning down your volume and you're too soft. And if you don't feel like you belong or you're not connected, that's when we see people go on mute and they're disengaging. And there are quiet quitters and they're the ones leaving the organizations. And it's a real issue that we need to address. So all the work that I do and all the different training and coaching consulting programs comes back to this framework. And accent bias plays a real role in this conscious and connected bubble, as well as confidence for those who feel that they have an issue with their accent. And so there's maybe about a chapter and a half where I've snuck in these concepts, but the next book that I'm writing, it will be 100% on accent bias. So that will be even more interesting. I'll come back in a couple of years and we'll discuss that one.
That will be wonderful because I'm so excited about this topic that I can't even imagine kind of where we'll be in a few years talking this. I mean, so much about the conflict, success, you know, the good and the bad that we see in a work environment really foundationally does have communication kind of there at the beginning. And we know that the same conversation that two people have, you know, their perspective of what was said, what they heard, what they experienced is going to be sometimes slightly different, sometimes significantly different, especially when we're dealing with high conflict situations. And so one of the things I find so interesting about the work that you do is that, you know, foundationally, when we look at communications, a lot of people focus in on the words that were used. What exactly were the words that were used? If we get a dictionary, what does the dictionary say that word means? But there's so much more to communication, and there's the body language. And I have never focused in on the aspect of accent as it relates to all of this and what that does in our mind. And I would, if you were going to give like, gosh, two sentences on accent bias. I mean, you said you have a neutral accent, you know, right at the beginning of the show, which I found so interesting because I was thinking to myself, gosh, I've never even thought of a neutral accent or what that means. But again, that would go to part of my privilege, right? Is because maybe somebody has said to me at some point in time, oh gosh, are you from, I once had someone say, are you from New Jersey? And I was like, that's interesting because I never would have thought of myself as having a New Jersey accent. But it goes to the privilege that I never thought, what is your accent? What does it portray about you? But if you were to, you know, give our listeners, like, what does that mean when we say accent bias? How would you describe it to someone?
That's a really good observation you've had, first of all, about your own accent, because those of us who grow up thinking we don't have an accent, it's because we've never experienced the bias that goes with it, right? And so accent bias, it's normal for our brains to try to categorize people. We meet someone, we hear them speak, we're deciding what's their gender, how old are they, how well educated are they, what's their socioeconomic status, where are they from in the world. That's very, very normal. And we develop biases and preferences depending on our life experiences, our education, our backgrounds, our family lives. When bias becomes discrimination is when we then start to make decisions based on that. And so, you know, for example, an African-American colleague, consultant, had spoken on the phone many, many times with a potential client. She shows up at his office and he says, oh, you didn't sound Black on the phone. Okay, so it wasn't necessarily discrimination that he had categorized her in a certain way. That's a very normal process. But what if, because he did not categorize her as African-American, that is the reason she got the invitation for the meeting? What if he then decided not to give her the job based on race, which he wasn't able to suss out through her accent? So this is the type of situation we're looking at, which comes up far more often than we even realize.
And it's interesting because I've spoken about or heard about these concepts more kind of from a microaggression standpoint of somebody making the comment, gosh, you have really good English, as a microaggression. But when you kind of look at it holistically in the way that you nicely kind of lay out this concept, I realize, gosh, this isn't just a microaggression. It's so much more than a microaggression. The microaggression may be that comment of you speak English well, but there's so much more to what's happening in our brains and actually what society is telling us, or I don't want to say feeding us, but what it helped us understand, or the bias it's already created in us in almost all the things that we do. So that's really interesting as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think it's a stretch to say that society feeds us. You know, if we look at Disney movies from a very young age, we're learning that the villains have accents. Just the Lion King, the hero, the king, has a very neutral, strong, lovely American accent. His brother, Scar, the villain, has a British accent. And they're both living in Africa. I mean, how does that make any sense? And yet, you know, immediately this five-year-old hears, ooh, this villain voice is British. It's different. It's evil. It doesn't sound like me. So we are actually kind of spoon-fed these concepts from very, very early on.
It's time for a quick break. For those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HRPowerHour.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Heather Hansen, founder of Global Speech Academy, where she helps top global leaders show up, speak up, and inspire action in a changing world. She's also the author of the recent book, Unmuted, the must-read guide to enhancing your communication. And today we're talking about accent bias at work. Right before the break, Heather, you had just mentioned kind of the Lion King as a good way to show accent bias and how society and the media and entertainment is kind of spoon feeding us some of this information. And you and I talked about a week ago, we got to meet each other. I like to do these kind of pre-call discussions to get a better sense as to the topic. And one of the things that you mentioned to me was the movie Cars, the Pixar Disney movie Cars, and how there is a specific character. He happens to be my nephew's favorite character, Nader, who has a very thick Southern accent. And you talked a little bit about what that does in our mind. And I'd love for you to share more of that with our listeners, because I found it just so compelling.
That's another really great example. And people, when we talk about accent bias, they usually only equate it with foreign accents, and they forget about the fact that there are so many people just within the United States who face accent bias all the time. And this is a really great example. If you look at that character, you know, it's the really old beat up pickup truck, and he's really warm hearted, but very naive and just... Yeah, this is a real typical stereotype that we have about Southerners, and we build it into characters to build the characters. So when especially animated films are trying to get you to really connect with a character, they're building on stereotypes. That's what they do with the voice, with the character, the personality. And so adding these characteristics to the accent is playing on the stereotypes that we have about the very warm, friendly, hospitable Southerner, but a bit dim, you know, not the smartest, and a bit naive and close-minded, and they don't know much about the world around them. And, you know, they're just real simple. And that is a stereotype that we see replayed and replayed and replayed throughout our media and movies, films. And it's very clearly put into Cars as well. And then what happens, you know, when these kids grow up? We have studies from groups of children in the South as young as nine who are able to identify the difference between a Northern and Southern accent. And more than that, they will say that the Northern accent sounds more intelligent, that they have everything together. They're the leaders, whereas the Southern sounds friendlier. So children as young as 9 already know, ooh, you know, my accent actually isn't very smart. So these are characteristics we're placing and equating with accents. And then people are digesting that and we take those ideas out into the world.
And it's interesting because when you and I first started speaking and you said accent bias, in my mind, it was, oh, yeah, OK. So like the bias Americans have against people in other countries, whether or not it's British people or German people, you know, whatever the accent may be. Kind of that bias more generally. And you and I talked about the fact, well, it's not a protected class unless it touches in, you know, on some form of national origin or race or gender, you know, something along those lines. But you made a really interesting point to me and you touched on it when we're talking about Pixar's Cars. This isn't just an issue globally. This is also a within the United States issue because we are giving bias to maybe people who speak or talk in a similar accent to that which we hold and taking stereotypes, which in many cases likely are not true, and adding them on to different individuals based off of accent or potentially even any other bias that they may have. One time somebody yelled at me and they had a very similar accent and, you know, you've internalized that bias and now it causes you to find people with that accent are bad communicators or that you're struggling to hear or understand what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. And your example, when you said someone asked if you're from New Jersey and you kind of had this, like that's kind of weird. Think about how many of these stereotypes were at play there. What do we think of when we hear a New Jersey accent? What does that mean? And so here you are, powerful attorney in, you know, the Northeast, and someone says, are you from New Jersey? And it's like, wait, what? And I can imagine some of that internal bias is kind of bubbling up at the surface going, that is so odd. Why would you think I'm from New Jersey? And that has a lot to do with, of course, what kind of characteristics do we associate with that accent? I mean, Jersey Shore did not help them at all, that reality show that I was even able to watch in Singapore, right, on Netflix. So what is it we equate with these accents, with a New Yorker, someone from New Jersey, someone from Boston, someone from Minnesota? You know, I was recently running a program and someone said that, yeah, when he's in professional situations, he really tries to neutralize, which means reduce the accent in some way, taking on a different accent, which is known as general American, what we hear newscasters speak in, what we hear the majority of Hollywood actors speak in, which is why having a California style accent, it's loved all over the world because I sound just like their heroes on the movies. I sound like the images of sun-kissed beaches and I sound like Hollywood. And that has given me immense privilege, right? But you can see just in that example that you had and that experience you had, the regional biases we have are very, very strong. And then if we add to that ethnic variations of English spoken in the United States, Black English, it's known by a number of different names. And as times change, we change the name of it, but African-American vernacular, that is its own dialect. It is its own language. And people will view that as if it's substandard. There are many varieties from the Latin community, Hispanic varieties of English that are also viewed in certain ways. So this is very widespread within the United States, not even considering all of the immigrants who come and have foreign accents on top of whichever local, regional, ethnic variety they're also trying to speak, right?
I mean, it really is so interesting. And it's funny that you mentioned the Jersey Shore because, you know, when this happened, I was living in Iowa. So I was already out of kind of the region I had grown up in. So I was
so random.
Oh my gosh, New Jersey, like the nerve, which is silly because what would it matter, like what part of the United States I was in? But I already did, you know, feel like an outsider. And that's as a Caucasian woman to say like, oh, I felt like an outsider. But that accent aspect of it, you know, in the moment, I definitely would not have identified it as kind of that's what's happening. So I can only imagine what it's like for individuals who English maybe isn't their first language, or who do have very thick accents that maybe don't, you know, go to the neutral accent that you're discussing. And you never think about, or I've never thought about until you and I started talking, what a neutral accent is and what Hollywood portrays to us in the movies as kind of very neutral, and how that portrays the character itself. And I think, you know, when we talk about bias, and I talk about a lot of different types of bias, I've never talked about accent bias, but that first step is being awareness. You know, so the work you're doing, I think, is so fundamental. And just like saying accent bias, what are some other tools or steps that you've used maybe in courses to help people to even stop more and say, like, hold on a second, is my bias interfering with my decision making in this moment?
Yeah, it is. It all starts with that awareness, because we're at such an early stage of talking about this. Most people don't really realize it's there. They've never thought about it. And it is foundational and leads to all the other areas of discrimination that we see, because it's so closely linked to ethnicity, to race, to age, to sexuality, even, you know, comments like, and I've heard the stories of these kinds of comments of, yeah, but why do you have to sound so gay? Why do you have to be so flamboyant, right? These kinds of comments that people think it's normal and acceptable to say something like that, that goes to show how little we understand about linguistic bias in general and linguistic discrimination, that people will flat out say these things out loud when they would never say, why do you have to be so gay? Or why do you have to be so black? Or why do you have to be so old? Or we would never say that or accept those kinds of statements. And yet statements that are directed toward language are very, very common. So awareness is the first step. Then, you know, understanding what language, how accents work, why we have them, where we develop the biases, then becoming more self-aware of our own biases and our own privilege. So even people who have experienced accent bias could have also experienced privilege. I experience privilege everywhere in the world that I go because I'm an English speaker. Yet due to my skin color, I have even more privilege, because an English speaker with darker skin is going to be treated very differently. So you can see how the links to other areas of discrimination are so strong. So we need to understand our own personal biases. That goes back to really getting clear about what has your contact been with different accents. If the only time you have ever spoken to an Indian speaker of English has been in a frustrated call center, that is going to change the way you view that particular style of speech. If you've had this emotional situation where you're really upset, your Microsoft Office isn't working, whatever it is, and you call customer support, and you're having this really difficult phone call, and you're having trouble understanding, and you're already impatient, that sticks with you. Or maybe you grew up watching The Simpsons, and so you have this idea in your mind that Apu, the Indian shopkeeper, is your typical Indian English speaker, who, by the way, is voiced by a white American man, and it's a completely made-up accent, and a whole generation thinks that that's how Indian people speak, which is absolutely not correct. So really digging in deep to figure out where are your own biases coming from, coming to the realizations that you probably don't even want to say out loud, but it's really important to get honest with yourself about that. And then finally, learning how to be a more inclusive communicator. And by that, I don't just mean using folks instead of you guys, but I mean, really at the foundation, how do you speak in a way that is better understood by everyone everywhere, by simplifying your vocabulary, reducing cultural idioms, reducing even phrasal verbs, which can be very complicated for foreign learners of English. How do we invite more people into the conversation? How do we ask the right questions? How do we ensure there's equal talk time in the meeting? How do we set rules of engagement for our meetings and interactions in the workplace to ensure that every voice is heard and included? And then how does that also get integrated into our company policy? And that's probably where it needs to start in organizations, and where currently linguistic bias is nowhere to be found in in DEI policy. So we know that it's very difficult to get legal protection of it because it does need to be linked to national origin or some other form of discrimination that is protected, and language and accent by itself is not protected. But we can start talking about it more in the organization and protecting it ourselves within the organization and ensuring it isn't happening. So my training and programs around accent bias cover all of these elements, starting all the way at the beginning of what is this? Why does it matter? What is your bias? Because a lot of people show up thinking, this isn't a thing, you know, oh, everyone's offended about everything, you know, those kinds of attitudes. And then when you really recognize, whoa, this is foundational, this is underneath everything, and you start seeing it everywhere around you, it really starts to make a difference.
You know, one of the things that you mentioned to me in an earlier conversation that really did say to me, gosh, this really is everywhere, is individuals who don't identify with a specific gender and their voice or tone giving away potential, like, gender identification, yes, to outsiders, which may be what outsiders may identify them as, but which the individual themselves is not going to identify by the gender. The people's stereotype of that tone of voice is going to lead them to believe that was a woman speaking or that was a man speaking. And whether on the phone or in more remote settings, such, you know, when there's not pronouns identified or anything along those lines, you immediately are going to make an assumption. And, you know, Saturday Night Live did all those skits, gosh, decades ago, and I could be aging myself, but about Pat and kind of what was Pat's gender, right? But, you know, you see a lot of gender neutral names now, and normally somebody is going to think in their mind, gosh, I know I grew up with a male Ashley. Ashley I'm talking to must be a male. And then hearing a voice, and maybe you're changing and you're like, oh, no, Ashley's a female. But the problem is, kind of with that mindset and what you've kind of discussed already, is hold on a second. Like, you're just using another stereotype now based off of accent, tone, the aspects our brain relies upon in order to make kind of those split second decisions. And unfairly so, likely, in a lot of situations.
Yes, exactly. And this is exactly what we do. We're so concerned with putting people into those boxes. You know, even if you don't think of it consciously, when you answer the phone, you've already categorized. You've put a little note in the back of your brain that I was speaking with a woman. Her name is this and that, and that's a person I need to email later. And you're basing that simply off of the voice that you're hearing and possibly the name, as you said. It's so funny you mentioned Ashley. That's my middle name. And I spell it L-E-Y, which is the typical male spelling. And so it's funny you just happened to grab that name.
I promise you that I did not, like, scour the internet and learn that. That was just kind of the one that came to mind, because right. I grew up looking at Ashley as a male name. And it wasn't until I got into a professional environment that I started meeting female Ashleys. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like,
that's so interesting.
You know, so it was very interesting. I mean, this is a topic that I feel like we truly could do, you know, multiple hours. And of course, you're writing a book, so that makes sense. We do need to take a quick break. For those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOB Radio. Radio.com. We'll be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis, and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, Paper Trails and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
Back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Heather Hansen, founder of Global Speech Academy, where she helps top global leaders show up, speak up, and inspire action in a changing world. She's also the author of Unmuted, the must-read guide to enhancing your communication. And today we've been discussing accent bias. And if you've been with us for the whole show, I'm going to highly recommend Unmuted, especially since Heather noted that there are multiple chapters, or a chapter and a half at least, on some of the things we're discussing here. And I hope that people who are listening kind of after the show really do start thinking about accent bias in not just the entertainment they're consuming, but all the decisions that they're making. Because I tell you what, it's only been about 6 days since I first met Heather. And it's already, I don't want to say life-changing, Heather, because I think, you know, I don't want to oversell it, but I do think a lot of the concepts that you're talking about here are ones that we haven't talked about kind of more globally, and then also ones that are strikingly missing from the HR kind of realm. And with that, I would actually love for us to jump into, you know, how accent bias works in HR, and specifically talking about both hiring decisions and also promotion decisions, because I think those are two places where we likely see, unfortunately, the greatest adverse impact. Let's start with kind of hiring decisions. What are some of your thoughts as to how accent bias could be adversely affecting those decisions?
We know through a number of studies that accent bias shows up very prominently in hiring decisions. And there's very recent research out of the UK from an organization called Accent Bias Britain that has done a very widespread study on this. And what they are finding is that the best way to mitigate this bias in the hiring decision is simply to raise the awareness of the hiring manager. So out of all of the different interventions they tried, the one that worked significantly, statistically, was to just have a small paragraph at the top of the hiring forms, whatever their form is, to say accent bias can influence your decision. Please do not take language, accent, or any other linguistic factors into consideration when, you know, judging this candidate. And simply having that little statement at the top as a reminder was the one thing that was able to reduce the amount of accent bias they saw. This was better than running training and all these other interventions that they tried. But they also said that makes sense because the first step is to raise awareness, and we don't have the awareness yet. So the training doesn't work until you're aware. And so it's kind of that knock-on effect of starting with the awareness piece. But that is such a simple fix, right? To add just a small statement. And I would take it even further to include all those areas that we're protecting in our diversity and inclusion programs to remind that hiring manager that, you know, we do not hire based on blah, 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 including accent and language. The problem right now is that our HR policies, our DEI policies, do not include accent and language. And so it's forgotten. It isn't taken into consideration.
And it's so interesting because I feel as though one of the pieces of pushback that organizations would receive, right, would be, but communication skills. Communication is essential for this job. But when we talk about it in this vein, it goes back to a privilege, right, of an expectation of a hiring manager that strong communication will look and feel and sound like their communication. And that is creating an impasse for individuals whose accent may not be the same as the decision maker being unable to enter into the organization kind of just as an initial step. So not even talking about like, let's have an inclusive environment for people with different accents or with different communication stuff. And I don't even want, communication is too broad, but different dialects.
It's so hard, right? Because we have all of these ideas, like you say, about what a leader looks and sounds like. And we have this horrible connection with eloquence and leadership, where we think if someone speaks well, presents well, shows confidence, has charisma, professional presence, what do all of these words mean? It simply means that they're fitting the picture that we have in our minds of what a leader looks and sounds like. And if you have someone walk in with an accent different to yours, and assuming that you are part of that privileged class of a general American accent, it's very hard to imagine that person being in that leadership role, or even possibly being in that customer service role, or being in that hospitality role, or it doesn't matter. And we immediately will shut down and say, oh, this person's so hard to understand, or, oh, I can't talk to them, or, oh, their communication skills are so bad. And these are the clients I see every single day. And the accent bias is subtly hidden inside of these complaints around professional presence, charisma, communication skills, leadership skills. And when they really get honest with me and I say, well, what exactly, what do you mean? Then it will finally come out. Well, we think they're just too hard to understand. They aren't global enough. They can't communicate in a global environment. People can't understand them. They're too difficult. And then we get into the accent. And yeah, it's also important to note that understanding is very subjective. We think we don't understand. They're so hard to understand. It's so difficult. When really we do understand a lot more than we think. It's the frustration and emotional responses we're having that make us shut down and say, oh, they're too hard to communicate with. But when really we can understand, it's more a question of, do we want to? And I think that's an important point just to mention there as well.
And it's interesting because one of the things, you know, when we're talking about hiring and best practices for going into an interview, we talk about take some time between the last task you are working on and going into the interview. Be mindful that if you just got off a high tense or very frustrating meeting, that you're making sure that you don't bring that into the interview, some of these concepts or ideas. But something you mentioned in an earlier segment was about your experiences with individuals with a certain aspect. And if you're, you know, very frustrated and your Microsoft isn't working and you're on with a call center employee and their accent is new to you, how you're going to then take that accent and use it almost as an anchoring. That's your anchoring experience with that accent and how it's adversely going to affect your decision-making kind of moving forward when you hear that accent again. And if it was the same accent as you, if you were talking to someone who had the same dialect, same accent as you, who you knew was down the street, I would presume kind of you wouldn't have that same anchoring effect because you have all these other experiences with that accent versus somebody who is coming or hearing a dialect or an accent for the first time, and then how that's adversely affecting business decisions. I mean, your Microsoft experience may have been business related, but how badly that could affect some of the decisions you're making kind of in employment.
It's exactly that. And the less contact you've had and the less points of reference, the stronger those emotional reactions could be.
So let's hypothetically, right? Because as an attorney, my whole world is like, hypothetically, let's have a conversation. Hypothetically, though, let's say that we bring somebody into the work environment who does have a heavy accent or who, you know, definitely whose dialect is different from your own. At that point in time, how do you evolve kind of the organization to make sure, great, we have a diverse team. How do you make sure that person is unmuted so that they are able to share all of their concepts, all the ideas, and they're able to truly bring the value that they have to the organization versus kind of, I don't want to say feeling less than, but I have a feeling the organization is going to create a feeling of less than on them.
Yeah. Absolutely. And part of that is because we don't openly talk about this. We'll talk about accepting their race, for example, if it's different as a foreigner, or accepting cultural aspects of how they're showing up at work. But we don't talk about accepting the way that they speak. And there are still, and I would say, especially in the native speaking countries, America, the UK, Australia, Canada, Ireland, these places, there is this idea that those of us who were born with English and grew up with English, that we're the owners of the language, that we speak it the best, and everyone else needs to figure out how to talk like us because, well, it's our country and it's our language and everything else. And this is just a overriding, you know, attachment we have to our language. And it happens everywhere. This is in every language. It has nothing to do with just English or just Americans. It happens in Denmark with Danish. It happens in Germany with German. So it's everywhere that people think this way. And because we don't have it in our policies, it's very hard to then bring the subject up in the meeting and say, whoa, 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 maybe we need to stop interrupting. Let's give him some time to express that. Or, you know, maybe that isn't an appropriate comment to point out or make fun of the way he pronounced that word. So a lot of, you know, what we're doing in accent bias training as well is, how do we address these kinds of situations? What is the acceptable, appropriate way to talk about it? You know, the biggest question I'm always asked is, but Heather, you know, what if I really, really don't understand? You know, there's one thing where people just are impatient and, oh, I can't understand him. But there are people who, and I would say hopefully the majority, are really, truly trying to understand, but because they haven't had contact with that accent, because they don't know how to tune their ear to accents, they don't have any point of reference to understand, they just simply can't process. And then we talk about, you know, using more spelling, more writing, drawing, finding other ways to communicate, body language, gesturing. How do we create that understanding? Because it stems first from that want and need to communicate. But how do we do it in a way that isn't actually full of microaggressions and pointing out and making someone feel like an other, but taking on the responsibility of, I'm so sorry, I've never heard someone speak the way that you speak. I'm trying to tune my ear. It's taking me some time. I'm not good at this, right? It's not that there's anything wrong with you. I just simply haven't had the contact and I don't understand. So we need to take on a little bit more of the responsibility. It's a two-way street. We love to point out the speaker all the time, but very often it's the listener that needs to do some work. So I like to teach people how to start hearing different accents, how to tune your ear. It's just a code that we need to crack. You know, if maybe someone says ah instead of ah, but they'll do that consistently. Just crack the code and it gets easier and easier. The problem in the workplace, though, that we see is due to people feeling uncomfortable, they avoid. So, I have so much trouble understanding him. I don't want to talk to him. And they avoid. And that's the absolute worst thing you can do. You actually need to talk to the person more. You need to hear the accent more. You need to have a lot more conversations with them so it gets easier and easier. But we all have the tendency to avoid. And it could be also the person with the accent that is different who, because of all of, you know, not feeling that they belong, they start turning down their voice and they don't speak as much either because they're afraid of being misunderstood or not understood. So they also stop speaking. And that's the worst thing that person can do. So there's just so many elements to this in the workplace and how it shows up. But there are a lot of things we can start doing in the day-to-day interactions to mitigate the bias and have people feel more included.
Like I said earlier, I feel like we probably could do, you know, multiple hours on this topic because you have so much great information and it is such a broad topic. We are going to take another quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
We're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today we've been speaking with Heather Hansen, founder of Global Speech Academy and author of Unmuted. And we've spent the last hour having, you know, what I find, and I hope you all have found as well, to be a really, really interesting dialogue about accents and how biases in our own life adversely affect decisions we make based off of the accents of the people who we interact with, and not just interact with, but who we see on television and in movies, and the biases that it creates and the stereotypes that it brings to front of mind in those situations. In the last segment, Heather, one of the you mentioned that kind of really got my mind thinking in another direction as well is putting the focus in on the listener or themselves, how you can actively listen maybe to decrease some of this bias. What would be some of your suggestions for people who really want to improve their listening to decrease some of the biases we've talked about today?
Oh, that's a really excellent question, because I'm always saying there's this massive industry around accent reduction, right? And I think that's going about it completely the wrong way. We need to be focused on accent recognition and understanding, having greater patience and understanding for all the different accents. So from the listener perspective, it's first of all, realizing that yes, you also have an accent. And if you believe it's the neutral variety, or that you didn't have an accent at all, then it means that you're already in a place of privilege. You've never had to deal with this. So it's about recognizing that privilege and also really digging deep to understand the biases, thinking back through your life about all the contact you've had with different accents. How much contact have you had? Was it positive? Was it negative? What have you learned from the films you've watched, the movies you grew up with, the people that you've interacted with, the teachers that you've had, the things your parents said? Get really clear on what your own personal biases are, and then start listening in a little bit different way. As I hope after this, you know, conversation we've had, that listeners walk away being so much more aware of this concept. And I think they'll go into their conversations thinking very differently, going, oh, wow, yeah, you do sound different than me. And what kind of emotion does that bring up in me? And am I giving you the same attention that I would give someone else? Or am I not as interested in listening to you because I don't like the way you sound? And we've all been in those situations where, oh, I just don't like listening to her or him. And why is that? What is the trigger? Why is it triggering you? And what does it have to do with the accent? Because once you've uncovered that for yourself, it's much easier to then break the bias in the moment and say, okay, I know that I'm reacting negatively and I don't want to listen to this person because of these past experiences I've had. I want to be different this time. And that's the first, very first step that we can take as more active and curious listeners to change the way that we're interacting and be more inclusive.
Heather, thank you so much for your time today. This really has been a really enjoyable episode for me to work on. And I've honestly learned so much. So I really, really appreciate that. And for you taking your time to be a guest today. So thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you for highlighting this important topic and for inviting me to be here. It's been so fantastic. I've absolutely enjoyed it. So thank you so much.
If you're interested in learning more about Heather and the work she does at Global Speech Academy, or interested in learning more about Unmuted, please check out her bio on the webpage. And thank you so much. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.